Hello, everybody, and welcome to Ghoul Society.
That's my older sister, Jamie.
And that's my little sister, Sarah. We are grateful to be recording on the stolen territories of the Lekwungen, Songhees, Esquimalt, and Wasanich peoples, whose historical relationships with the land continue to this day. The fight against colonial violence and racism is ongoing, and we at Ghoul Society are committed to this fight and working toward reconciliation within ourselves, our families, and our communities. By listening to this podcast, you've officially been inducted into the underground Ghoul Society. We did it.
We did it. Yay. We remembered. Oh, what are you knitting back there? I didn't even notice.
Oh.
Are you knitting a sweater?
Oh, wouldn't you like to see?
Is it a sweater vest?
It's a t-shirt.
Oh, it's so cute.
Thank you. I'm almost done. I have one sleeve left.
Oh, Bristol.
Bristol's cleaning the kitchen. We love him. Yeah, I have one sleeve left.
Oh, okay. Nice. And it's so cute. I love the color.
Thank you. Me too. I'm really excited for it to be done. I think I might just, if we're not going to Costco today, I can decorate my house for fall. That's what I'm going to do.
What? I thought that's why you asked Bristol to go to Costco tomorrow so that we could go to Spirit Halloween.
This is true. This is
or
true.
Or did you forget?
But, like, yes, but then I didn't make the connection that
are
I would
you kidding
then
me?
Decorate.
Oh my gosh.
Because I want to make a lot of decorations. Because I just don't want to buy plastic, and I don't want plastic all over my house.
Oh, I have a cute one that my coworker made. You take like an old book. She got a book from a free library, and then cut it out into ghost shapes and just like colored little two eyes on it.
Aww.
And then grabbed a piece of string and little clothespins and just hung it up like garland.
That's so, like, the whole book or just from the paper?
Like, just cut out ghost shape from the paper.
Oh, the pages inside the book.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. That's so cute.
So you could maybe do that.
Yeah, I want to make some cute bunting fabric triangles.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Cute.
That's kind of my thoughts. I actually have a list of things that I want to do.
Okay.
I do want to get some, like, lights that are on the fake branches with the leaves.
I have a set of those.
Yeah, they're nice.
But it's really, mine's really short, and we don't know where to hang it. Oh, I should put it in front of my TV.
Yeah.
Duh. I'm so silly. I didn't know where to put it.
Silly Billy. That's great.
Yeah.
So I went on a ghostly walk last night.
Yeah, how was it? Do you want to tell me maybe what stories they covered? Because I'm curious to know if they cover the same stories every year, every walk.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too, because I've done one before.
Yeah.
And then I was a little bit worried that they were going to
just do
have
the same
stories. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they didn't. There was one that overlapped.
Okay.
So we started in Market Square on Johnson Street, and we walked like up Johnson Street. And the first one that we talked about was the Pony Saloon.
Oh,
which
I
then
heard.
Promptly called the Pink Pony Club.
Obviously.
Duh. And it just talked about, oh, okay, here's the thing. I don't want to spoil it. I'm just going to tell you locations because I might actually use some of...
Yeah, that's fine. I just wanted to know if they were different or the same because I do want to go on one later.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not later today.
I'll come
like,
with you. I want to go.
Yeah, because I want to go with Montana.
Yeah.
Because we went last year with Taylor. It was so much fun.
So fun. Yeah. So they did the Pink Pony Club. Then they did, you know, the hotel that they're renovating on the corner of like Broad Street. I think it's Broad Street and Johnson. It was like a big, big, it wasn't a hotel.
Oh.
It's going to be.
Oh, that's going to be a hotel.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be apartments.
No, it's a hotel. It's owned by the university.
Oh.
Because the man who used to own it, I was told this, the man who used to own it, when he passed away, he said that he was going to leave everything in the university's trust.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, so.
Oh, well, that's kind of cool.
I think so, too. Like, an income source for the university that isn't just gouging international students.
And also isn't oil.
Yeah. But also, to just pay your people, well, I don't know. I saw this thing in the school the other day, and someone had printed off the salaries for the executives at UVic.
Oh, shit.
And they just went around. I feel like they hung a bunch of them on the boards, like, around the school. And, yeah, like, the UVic president makes, like, $450,000.
Jesus. And they probably get promoted, like, every year.
Yeah, probably.
Because that's how that works.
Anyway.
That's insane. But that's cool. I'm curious to see what the hotel will look like.
Yes. Okay, so that used to be a brothel. And then we went to Chinatown, and he told the story of Chan.
Yeah, who ran down the,
That one's a classic.
Yeah.
And then he told us a story about the old owner of the McPherson Playhouse.
Ooh.
Yeah. And then he told us a story... Oh, and then they brought us into, they're renting out a space in Market Square.
Yeah.
I didn't go in that last time.
Oh, where they sit you down and finish the tour?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, they didn't finish it there, but we did take a break there. That space is so scary.
Yeah, it is.
I got really dizzy. Like, I'm not fucking kidding you. I was so dizzy. I was actually, like, going to tell Finnerty, like, I'm going to pass out. Because I couldn't, and then I just felt like someone was watching us the whole time.
Whoa.
And it was really, really spooky. Anyway, then we went back outside and back into the square, and he told a story that I did not know about, of this lady in the 1800s who, do you know where Paboom is?
Probably.
It's like right by the Drake.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so... this lady used to own... Paboom used to be a bakery.
Yeah.
And she owned it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know this story?
I think so.
And she lived in Esquimalt and would walk over the bridge.
Yeah.
Every day and every night.
Yes.
To get to work.
Yes.
And to her house. But it wasn't the bridge as we know it now. It was like a rail bridge.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's the story I want to cover next. So I'm not going to go into detail right now.
I was looking at that story, too,
mm-hmm.
because of what
it's connected to. It's
called.
Oh.
Most of the time.
Oh.
What maybe. People refer to it. Well, refer to, like, the guy, the man who killed her.
Oh, yeah, that's what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
Who it's connected to.
Dun, dun, dun.
Da, da, da.
That's a story for another time. Sorry, folks, you'll have to wait. Oh, well,
yes.
I mean, it's already out there, but we said on our last episode there was maybe something special to tell everybody. And I know we've already posted it on our Instagram, but we will be at the Halloween market.
Yeah!
Halloween YYJ on the 26th during their early bat shopping hour. I'm not sure if there's still tickets left, but there could be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you'll have to get tickets online for the early bat one.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of, it gives people the chance to shop in a way that isn't so overly stimulating.
Mm-hmm.
Because apparently this market gets crazy. So if you are one of those people that would like to shop the market in the early hours, you can purchase the early bat tickets. And then I believe on the 27th,
mm-hmm.
if all goes according to plan, we will be set up in a booth
mm-hmm.
where people yeah. can come and tell us their ghost stories.
Yeah.
Which I'm really excited about and also already spooked about.
Yeah, so if you're in the area and you can't come on the 26th to the early bat shopping hour, we'll let you guys know if we're there on the 27th as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you should come say hi.
Yeah.
And all of tell us your stories.
Yeah. And all of our information will be on our Instagram. We still haven't yet made a website. We could.
We could.
Yeah. We don't have to rush it.
No. Maybe not yet.
No, not yet. I think that's everything.
I think that's it, but I'm just so stoked that when they reached out to us, I FaceTimed Jamie and I was freaking out.
Yeah, right away.
I was so excited. Mm-hmm. Like, are you like, what? We're going to do a live episode?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It is crazy. Yeah.
I'm so excited.
Me too. It's going to be really amazing.
Yeah. And we're going to dress up.
Yeah. And the episode will probably be a local story.
Yeah.
I mean, it will be.
Yeah. For sure. So we'll have to choose. Well, I think Jamie's going to do it, so.
You know, I was thinking we could probably both do one.
You think?
I don't know.
Well, what we could both prepare one and then just see how the time goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds good.
And look at it that way.
Yeah.
And then if we don't have time for a second one, then we don't have time. And then we can record this that at a later time as well.
Yeah. I'm trying to decide which story to do because we could go like really gruesome with it, mm-hmm. or not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But that's our exciting news. Yeah, we're so stoked to be there. Mm-hmm. It's going to be so much fun. And there's so many artists there as well.
Yeah. All the merchants and artists that are going to be there all have spooky Halloween-y things.
Yeah.
Like, only Halloween merchants.
Only Halloween stuff. And I follow some of the, like, ceramic artists that are going to be there, and their Halloween stuff is so cute. I'm going to have such a hard time not buying everything.
Yeah. It'll be great. Mm-hmm. Okay, what do you have for me today?
Okay. So, I've had this story ready for a while.
What?
Like a month.
Okay.
I'm just going to start with a trigger warning for domestic violence and murder.
I mean, if you're listening to this show,
you should know.
Yeah, that we talk about murder sometimes, but we mm-hmm. do like to give trigger warnings for like violence against women, yeah. violence against non-men, essentially. Yeah. Violence against men too, just violence.
Yeah, just
domestic violence,
domestic
sexual violence. Yeah.
Right. So this is a story of Maggie Vale. This week we're going to St. John, New Brunswick to talk about Sarah Margaret or Maggie Vale. I'll call her Maggie throughout the story because that's what she went by. And the story comes from one of my bosses, Colin. Shout out to you, Colin.
Oh, it's this one.
It's this one.
Okay.
I've been teasing it for weeks.
Yeah. Okay.
So Colin shared with me his own experience with Maggie's ghost when he was a teen in St. John. So I'll share his story at the end of the episode. And thank you, Colin, for bringing this to my attention. He was so excited to share with me, and I'm so excited to be able to tell the story. It's gonna be great. Maggie Vale was born in Carleton, then known as St. John West, New Brunswick, in 1845. She was the youngest of six sisters and three brothers. Maggie wasn't considered the most beautiful woman in St. John, with her stout figure and crooked teeth, but people said it was her spirit that had made her so attractive. She always followed the popular dressing styles at the time, and this, paired with her beautiful long brown hair and dazzling smile, is what drew people to her.
That's really cute.
Yeah. The beginning of the end of her short life begins in 1865.
Okay, right into it.
Yeah. At this time, she was still living with her father, who was ill at the time, when she met a John A. Monroe while out on a picnic. Does he sound familiar?
Yeah.
John A. Monroe was born in 1839 to a well-respected family in St. John. Growing up in luxury, he became a very successful architect as an adult, creating many important buildings that still stand in St. John today.
Oh, wait. What about the Monroe building here? Not connected.
I don't think that's connected.
Okay.
I didn't see it in any of my research.
Okay, so we're staying on the East Coast.
Yeah. We're staying in St. John. They didn't really leave, so.
Okay.
When John met Maggie on that picnic, he was already a married man with two children.
Of course he was. Men, listen. Look, listen, look. Men. Listen. Oh my God. If you are married and you have kids, don't start seeing someone else. Just, I don't know, be a good person. Take care of your kids. You can separate, okay? But take care of your kids.
Not in the 1800s.
Just...
It's the 1860s, man.
I'm so mad. Okay, continue.
His wife, Annie Potts, was not a love match, but was one of convenience to cement both of their social statuses. Annie was a doting wife and mother, but she did not adore John, which was difficult for him, as it said that he was coddled as a child. So this made him expect that everyone who knew him would adore him like his parents did.
Okay, well... So, not everyone is going to like you.
So he didn't get enough attention from Annie.
Aw.
So he went seeking it somewhere else.
Classic.
Yeah, really. But upon first meeting him, Maggie became infatuated with John, and he loved that attention.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The two had begun an affair, and in 1867, Maggie became pregnant.
Okay.
John would often visit Maggie at home, something her older sister, Philly, would recount during his trial. But as Maggie came closer to giving birth, John saw her less often.
Oh, no. This is so sad.
During one of these scarce visits, he even asked Maggie if she would poison his wife, Annie, as if that would make things better.
Wait. Okay. So I thought he was seeing his love affair less.
Yeah, he is. But then at one point, he's just like, hey, Maggie, do you maybe want to poison my wife, Annie? Get rid of her.
Oh, okay. So he's still wanting to see Maggie.
But he's not like in love with her.
Okay. He just wants the attention.
Essentially.
Okay.
And now he's having what would be then considered a bastard child. So.
Yes.
And he's very well known around the city of St. John.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Okay.
Finally, in February of 1868, Maggie gave birth to their daughter, Ella May Monroe, who was registered as John's daughter, something he later disputed.
Oh, okay.
Ella was a healthy baby, but she was born with an umbilical hernia, so her aunt Philly, Maggie's sister, made her a truss to wear. This is important later. A truss is like a belt that provides support and lessens hernia pains.
Okay.
So it kind of just keeps it in place.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like how that's important later.
Yeah. Sorry. Since Maggie's family wasn't well off and she was an unwed mother, her sister Philly wanted John to give her financial support, obviously. He sent small amounts of money only a few times, but soon said he didn't want anything to do with Ella or Maggie. Months passed with no word from John until Maggie's father passed away and left her the family home. Since Maggie knew John came from a well-off family, she went to him for advice with what to do with the house.
Yeah, like as if he has good advice in anything.
As a result, she sold her family home for $500. Do you want to guess what that would be today?
Oh no, but she could have lived there.
Yeah.
Never sell a house.
Yeah.
Okay, unless it's haunted. $500, what's the year again?
Probably 1860. Yeah, it's 1868 still. So.
I'm going to guess that's $500,000.
Oh, no.
Okay, let me try again. Okay. $75,000.
No.
Okay, $5,000.
Okay, more than that. Just over $10,000.
Wow, that's cheap. Why'd she sell it for so cheap?
I don't know.
Girl.
Because it was... probably not very nice because they weren't very well off.
Right. Okay.
A lot of kids. Oh, and her mother died when she was like really young. So it was just her dad. And then her dad was sick. So.
Right.
Okay. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's rumored that John told her to sell the house so that he could get some of the money out of helping her. But he later denied this.
Oh my God.
With no home, Maggie and Ella started to live in boarding houses in St. John.
Yeah. I was going to say exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Often using the alias Mrs. Clark and often paid for by John.
As a sex worker?
No, just a board. She just lived in it.
Oh,
she just didn't want to go by Maggie. I don't really know why she used an alias. I think it's so that if John came around, he wouldn't be associated with Maggie Vale.
Okay.
Or Ella. Like,
yeah.
Because in that sense, if she uses an alias, Ella isn't his child.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's a bit confusing. But from my research, I think she didn't have the money from the sale of the house. Like, she didn't have it. Mm-hmm. And when asked by a boarder why she was living in boarding houses, she would say that her, quote, husband, end quote, had her money. So I'm pretty sure John, like, held on to that money.
Okay.
And, like, would give her some
right
to live.
Right.
Like an allowance.
It's kind of crazy because, like, how much do you think staying in a boarding house cost every day?
A couple dollars? I don't know.
I'm wondering. A dollar a night?
I actually probably should have looked into that. I don't know.
I bet it's probably even less. It's probably like $1 a week or something.
$1. Yeah.
But still, so if they sell the house, yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's just really sad. Growing bored and annoyed with Maggie and worried about his social standing and career, John wanted to get rid of them.
Okay, so first he wants to get rid of Annie.
Yeah, then he's like, oh, that was actually crazy of me.
Then he's like, instead I'm gonna get rid of my mistress and my new child.
Yeah, because he claims Ella isn't his child, but Maggie wasn't with any other man.
Okay, so he's just a murderer.
Yeah.
Okay.
In October of 1868, He did hire a coach to take himself, Maggie, and Ella along Black River Road to Loch Lomond to visit the Collins family. They actually had done this trip once before, during which they had a picnic and did some target practice with revolvers, which is kind of, I don't know. He, like, claims that he doesn't like Maggie, but then he, like, takes her out on this picnic date.
No, he's like, I don't like you, but let's hang out.
Yeah. However, the second trip would be different. John had ordered the coach driver to stop so that they could walk the rest of the way to Loch Lomond. Similar to their first trip, the coach would wait for them at the tavern.
Okay.
So everything's the same as the first trip so far. However, 1 hour later, John arrived at the tavern alone, looking anxious and wanting to get back home in St. John.
Suspicious.
Mm-hmm. The coach driver, known as Warden, was told by John that Mrs. Clark was moving to Boston and that Mr. Collins would take her to the steamship.
Mm-hmm.
Months passed and Maggie's sister Philly was concerned. She only heard that movie that...
She only heard that movies are about her sister. She only heard it in the days.
She only heard that Maggie had moved to Boston to get married. In June of 1869, Philly finally got word from Maggie in the form of a letter saying that she had married a painter with the name Crandall.
Psht, it's not from her.
However, the writing was different, and Maggie's signature did not match that of what Philly knew.
Mm-hmm.
But there wasn't anything she could do about it. There's no phones.
Except look for her sister.
Yeah, but she's supposed to be in Boston.
Just go there.
On with what money?
Yeah, I know.
Philly's poor. Fast forward to September 7th, 1869. A group of blueberry pickers come across skeletal remains under a bush. They were reluctant to say anything to authorities as they were people of color, and they were worried about how that would look to the white chief of police.
That's so honestly a safe bet.
Yeah, so they didn't say anything.
Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah. Days passed, but someone decided that it needed to be reported. So the police and coroner, Dr. Earle, were notified of the remains. They discovered an adult skull with a bullet hole in it, a child's skull and remains, tattered clothing, and not much else.
Wow.
By the time the remains were found, the animals had gotten to them and enough time passed that there was really no skin left.
Ooh, creepy.
Just some hair, I think.
Yeah.
Oof. Yeah.
And how long was that since they were killed? Like a couple
of
years?
So October 1868 to September 1869.
Okay, so a year.
So about a year, yeah. On September 16th, the coroner's inquest began. It lasted 3 weeks and involved 52 witnesses.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, that's so many. Okay.
This led them to suspect a man named James Kane. James had allegedly fathered a child in a previous marriage to an American woman who couldn't be found. Like, she was just missing, I guess.
Okay, she was probably like, I'm out of here, and she just ran away, maybe?
I don't know. I actually don't know.
I mean, she could have also just been killed by her partner.
So the police thought the remains were theirs. Additionally, in 1868, a random woman had attempted to pass as a Mrs. Kane and her child as that of Mr. Kane. So James was arrested. After a closer examination, though, with the help of witness testimonies, the evidence began to point to Maggie and Ella being the remains under the bush.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw that coming.
The clothing found at the scene was confirmed to be those of Maggie and Ella's by Philly. It was mainly Ella's truss that gave it away.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. Because that wasn't super common.
No.
And it was handmade, too.
Yeah, so. Philly made it for her, so I think she would know.
Yeah.
Philly was also able to identify her sister's remains by looking at her skull. Remember at the beginning when I mentioned her teeth?
Mm-hmm.
Her incisors were crooked in such a way that Philly knew it was Maggie's skull.
Wow.
That she was looking at.
Whoa.
Philly also testified that John had asked Maggie to poison his wife, Annie, and this cast more suspicion that he would be capable of nefarious behavior.
Yep. That's why you don't ask people to poison your wife.
Exactly.
Or your lover.
Exactly.
Just don't poison people.
Just don't kill people.
Yeah.
It's really not that hard.
No, it's not that hard.
As more evidence came to light, people began pointing their fingers at John as the murderer. Many witnesses had seen Maggie and John out together on multiple occasions. Jacob Vale, Maggie's uncle, had also testified that he heard rumors of Maggie and John's affair, which was confirmed by Philly, because Philly knew everything. Warden, the coach driver, also told police of the trips that Maggie and John took to Loch Lomond.
Mm-hmm. That's a good witness.
Yeah, right?
Mm-hmm.
Somehow, word of an unclaimed trunk in a locker at a Boston steamship company in St. John reached police. In it, they found clothing that would later be identified as Maggie's and Ella's, as well as a tintype photo of John.
What? Okay, what?
So she had a trunk packed.
Yeah.
Or he packed her trunk.
Oh, and then he just shipped it off.
And then he just left it at the docks.
Right.
In a locker.
Holy. Mm-hmm. Okay. Didn't try very hard to get rid of it.
No. Remember how Philly received that letter from, quote, Maggie, unquote, mm-hmm. about finding a husband in Boston?
Yeah.
But the writing was weird?
Yeah.
That was John.
Yeah. I called it from a thousand miles away.
At this point, John was subpoenaed. He admitted to knowing Maggie, but denied that Ella was his child, even though she had his last name.
What? Okay. Okay. Okay.
And he was the registered father on her birth certificate.
Well, okay.
I know, he's so delusional.
Yeah, delulu.
He denied advising Maggie to sell her family home and said he did take her to Loch Lomond to visit the Collins family and that she had moved to Boston to be married. I don't know.
Such bullshit.
Because of this, Dr. Earl, the coroner, suggested that John send word to Maggie in Boston in order to prove that she was alive.
So if she's alive, why don't you just send her a letter and then we'll see if she responds?
But this made John act weird.
Yeah, I bet.
Saying that
he's
things...
like, well, maybe she ran away.
Yeah.
She can't be reached.
Well, things, quote, looked very grim for him, unquote. Mm-hmm. Finally, on September on September 21st, 1869, John Monroe was arrested for the murder of Maggie and Ella. So
good.
Now there's two suspected men for the murder of Maggie. The St. John community was shocked by John's arrest, and the press was at his defense, with one article saying, quote, "The idea of his being guilty of such crime seemed to be utterly repudiated
okay.
as unworthy of belief," unquote. Further in
well,
John's...
Well, guess what? Believe it.
But they all liked him.
I know.
The whole city liked him.
Oh, well,
we've
guess what?
Before.
People that are high up in social power are usually bad.
True. Facts.
All facts, no printer.
Further in John's defense... Multiple editorials at the time suggested that James Kane was more likely to be guilty because of the unknown whereabouts of his wife and child. Because of the difference in social status, James was held in prison, like any other person charged with a crime, while John was lodged in the police chief's house.
My God.
Living in luxury because
wow.
they were friends.
Okay, but was she even seen with Kane?
No.
Well, what the?
I know. Okay. We're getting there. At the end of the coroner's inquest, the evidence, no matter how circumstantial, swayed so far towards John that he would stand trial for the murder of Maggie Vale.
Good.
James Kane was released on a cash bond with the stipulation that he would return to court if they found John was not responsible for the death.
Okay. Is that even a real thing?
It used to be.
Okay, like, hey, if we find that you're not, that this other guy's not responsible, you're gonna have to come back here. Like, no. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know.
You're either acquitted or not.
Yeah, right?
This in-betweenness.
But he wasn't even acquitted because they made him post bail.
Yeah, true.
So they still thought maybe it was him.
Wow. They just wanted his money.
Probably. The trial for the murder of Maggie began on December 7th, 1869. The judge presiding over the case was John Allen. The Crown prosecutors were William Tuck and Attorney General Andrew Wetmore. And the defense counsel was ran by Sam Thompson. By now, you'll realize that I keep saying that John is being tried for the murder of Maggie, but not Ella.
Mm.
Unfortunately, the Crown couldn't confirm that Ella was murdered, as there was no physical evidence to prove that she was murdered.
Wait, I thought she also had a bullet wound in her...
No, she didn't.
Oh, okay.
Despite the fact that a child's skeleton was found with Maggie's remains, and that later in John's confession, he mentions Ella... But there was no physical evidence, I guess.
Right.
At the time. Because of this, John was only on trial for the murder of Maggie, and sweet Ella would be forgotten throughout the trial.
Aw, that's so sad.
Yeah.
Okay.
Through the trial, the prosecution used the evidence found during the coroner's inquest in addition to further witness testimony that John was one of the only people who visited Maggie often. Billy's identification of Maggie's teeth, the trunk being found abandoned in a locker at a steamship company, etc. One testimony of note in this case is that of a store clerk who noted that John had bought a Smith & Wesson 7-barrel 22 revolver in the fall of 1868. Fuck me.
Did you just get possessed? By John? Did you just say that actually?
Oh my god.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I'm okay. I have so much spit in my mouth.
Oh god.
In the fall of 1868, he bought this revolver, likely right before Maggie's murder. The defense argued that all of the evidence was circumstantial and didn't prove that the victim was Maggie at all.
Okay, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
The 1800s of it all.
Yeah. Their whole plan was to prove John's innocence by way of showing him as a man of, quote, unimpeachable character, unquote, that of a devoted husband, father, and architect.
What does his wife think?
Honestly, she's really not mentioned.
Okay, because I feel like she's probably just trying to protect herself and her kids.
Probably.
But, like, if she was telling the truth, she would probably be like, oh, yeah, like, he's never home.
Yeah, like, he's gone all the time on these business trips.
Yeah.
Because...
It's a classic story.
Yeah. They argued that a financially secure man wouldn't have any reason to take Maggie's $500 from selling her family home. After all, yeah, that would have likely not been a lot to John as it was to Maggie.
That's fair, but I think it was more about the control.
Oh, definitely. Like, but they didn't want to say that.
Yeah, because he just wanted to be loved.
Yeah, he just wanted someone to admire him.
Yeah, exactly.
The defense called 35 witnesses that testified for John's character, including his parents, which is really biased. Okay. I don't know why they allowed that.
No, you can't bring your parents in on it.
They did.
Okay.
Of course they would be on his side.
Yeah, of course. Although
they admitted he might have committed adultery, they slandered Maggie, saying that she was a temptress who had ensnared him.
Oh.
Even though it takes two to tango.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Assholes.
Yeah. Truly. This is such a classic example of sexism that continues to persist in our society. It's always the woman's fault.
Yeah.
It reminds me, actually, of Gilmore Girls, when Lorelai and Chris's parents are arguing about what to do when they get pregnant as teenagers, because they're like 16.
Mm-hmm.
Chris's parents blame Lorelai for, quote, ruining, unquote, his future, and say that he had no part in it.
What?
Yeah.
And he literally got her pregnant.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, he has a big part in it.
Yeah. But anyway, it's just like in TV shows, it's in movies, it's in everyday life.
Yeah.
It's always there.
Yeah. It's disgusting.
It is. Anyway, at the end of the defense's arguments, the attorney general said, quote, every man has one good character until he forfeits it, unquote. Oh, that didn't really make sense.
No, it didn't. But,
quote, every man has one, as in good character.
Okay. Has one what?
Has one. Has good character. That's what that means.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Every man has good character okay. until he forfeits it.
Unquote. Oh, yes.
Sorry.
I understand. Old
time language is hard.
Yes.
I think this crushes the whole argument of the defense.
Yeah.
Because
he's admitting to it, kind of.
Yeah.
Right?
He forfeited his good character.
Yeah.
Why would you say that? Why would you add that? Like,
because they're just saying, like, he's a good man. He just made a mistake, which is, like, bullshit.
Oh, sorry. I guess the attorney general said that.
Oh, okay. Okay. Not okay.
Even bring paying it back. Attention to my own story.
Classic.
Yeah. So the attorney general was like, well, everyone's innocent until proven guilty, essentially.
Yeah.
Everyone's good until they prove that they're bad.
Yeah.
The defense's strategy was to paint John as a saint. But they desperately. But they desperately tried to get John's statement to the police chief excluded from evidence.
Dun, dun, dun. Okay.
An officer recalled that John had been warned by police not to make a statement without talking to a lawyer first. But John, thinking he could get away with it, talked freely and ended up incriminating himself.
Well, good.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you get for being egotistical and an asshole.
Yeah. So the trial was long, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But it only took the jury 1 hour to deliberate
what?
And come back with a guilty verdict.
Whoa. Okay.
This was an immediate death sentence for John.
Holy shit.
He was to be hanged.
Whoa.
And it only took them 1 hour. They were like, fuck this guy.
That's actually really intense.
I know.
I'm anti-death penalty.
Yeah.
For that exact reason. But I do think that he did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
However, they did recommend mercy in this case.
Oh.
So the jury was like, yeah, he's guilty, but maybe we should be a little bit nice and not hang him. Although this went to higher courts and a petition had gone around containing over 2,000 signatures to commute his sentence to life in prison, John was sentenced to hang on February 15th, 1870.
What? How many signatures did they need?
I don't know. That was just like from the town.
They got 2,000, but it wasn't enough.
It wasn't enough to sway the higher courts.
Wow. Okay.
That's just how things were back then.
Mm-hmm.
Fucked. Yeah. On February 15th, John awoke about 4 a.m., got dressed, and said his morning prayers. He was soon joined by clergymen, magistrates, and local reporters for his last moments. I believe it was at this time that he wrote out a confession. It's quite long.
I just got chills.
It's long.
Okay.
Quote, the first time I went out with Miss Vale, it was only for a ride. We had no quarrel, and our going out was at her wish. When we got out of the coach, at or near the place described on the trial, she had a satchel, and we walked along the road. I cannot say how far. Sat down and had a little target practice. Both fired at a mark. She using a pistol I gave to her, one of a pair. A breech loader, same as my own. The mate of it I gave to a friend. I had learned her how to use it. There was no intention on my part to harm her at the time. We came back, and I left her at Lakes. She was to have gone to Boston on the Thursday after the first going out, but it was too stormy, and I went with my wife to Fredericton on that day and came down again on Friday night. It was during that trip to Fredericton I first thought that the spot I had visited with Miss Vale was a suitable spot to commit a bad act. I went out again with Miss Vale on the Saturday following. We went to the same road as before and to about the same place. The morning was frosty, the moss was hard and crisp. There was no one on the barren. The road was a little muddy. We went off the road a little way together and sat down. I went into the bushes. The child cried. I came out again, was angry. I strangled the child. I do not know if it was actually dead. As she was rising up, I shot her, bracket Miss Vale, in the head. I cannot say that money was not one of the motives for the act committed. I do not say it was in self-defense I killed Miss Vale. It was the money, my anger with her at the time, and my bad thoughts on and after the trip to Fredericton, working together, caused me to do the bad act. The letter written to Miss Creer, Philly, was written by me and mailed by a friend of mine living in or near Boston. I never killed any other person or child.
Wow.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Isn't that insane?
Yeah. Oh my God.
He just like got mad.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I feel like that confession doesn't paint a full picture.
Mm-hmm.
At all. Like, literally at all. Because obviously there's a lot of, like, inner workings happening.
Yeah.
Within himself.
Yeah.
Of, like, a stress and torment. Mm-hmm. And, I don't know, rejection. Yeah. And all of these feelings.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying, obviously, like, it's mm-hmm. not because I think that he was in the right at all. Like, yeah. No. But, like, the way that he says his confession is just like, I just got mad. It's yeah. Like, no, like a lot of things led up to that.
Yeah.
And then that was the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah. And he mentions a trip to Fredericton. I didn't mention it because I couldn't really find information about it. But he went on a business trip and Maggie like followed him there or something. Like she went with him.
Followed him or went with him?
Like she was like, I want to go too. And he was like, okay. But apparently it went really bad.
Uh-oh.
Like, right. Like, he was really angry and just getting so annoyed with her because he thought she was being, like, clingy.
Right. Classic. Yeah. Well, of course she's being clingy.
Yeah.
Of fucking course.
You're giving her attention and she has your freaking child, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, what the fuck do you think is gonna happen?
Yeah. Like, you can't just go sleep with people and then be like, peace out.
Yeah.
I'm done with you. Like, no. And,
like, I don't know if he even ever said to her, I don't want to continue our relationship, but I admit that I fathered your child and I have to deal with that.
Right.
Obviously, he wouldn't admit to that.
No.
Ever.
He was just like, oops, I'm just going to try to run away from this.
Yeah, and then he couldn't, so then he killed them.
That's so fucked.
And he just strangled Ella because she was crying.
That's so fucked up.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And then Maggie was trying to protect her daughter.
Yeah,
and he shot her in the head.
Of course. Oh.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Okay.
At 7:45 a.m., a bell began to ring, and a black flag, known as the Flag of Death, was raised over the jail. John was said to have appeared pale and anxious on his way to the gallows.
I would be too, honestly. Yeah.
And was advised by a clergyman, quote, not to think of earthly things, but to fix his mind on the Savior of mankind, unquote.
That's actually kind of nice.
Yeah.
Like, don't worry about earth anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, not, yeah.
Think about Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah. Or any spiritual anything, or, really. Yeah. Just think
but
about
I
your
soul. But I think
it
was God.
Yeah.
Probably. Because I think he's Catholic.
Right.
Unlike other criminals, his corpse was released to his family so that they could carry out, a Christian burial.
Okay.
By the way, did I mention that it said that John was the architect that had built the gallows where he hanged?
What?
He built them!
Holy fuck. That's twisted. Boom. That's twisted.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It said that he noted, quote, I wonder who will be the first poor bastard to swing from this, unquote. And it was him.
Wait, he was the first
one? He was the first one to be hanged at his own gallows.
Holy. Okay.
That's crazy. Yeah, that's when Colin told me that, I was like, face wide open, my jaw dropped. I was like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, that's insane. Me. That's me right now.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. That's so wild.
I know.
Okay. Imagine, like.
I know.
Fuck.
Yeah. It's a weird twist of fate, I guess.
Mm-hmm. A little bit.
Maggie and Ella are buried in the Cedar Hill Cemetery in St. John, New Brunswick. On October of 2013, the Domestic Violence Community Action Group of St. John constructed a personalized headstone for Maggie and Ella. The headstone was erected in November, which is also known as Domestic Violence Awareness Month.
Oh, beautiful.
The headstone is their teardrop-shaped stone, and engraved is a mother cradling her baby in her arms.
Oh.
The Telegraph Journal wrote, quote, "Although we cannot rewrite the course of history, we must never forget the lives that have been stolen too soon," unquote. Forever memorializing what is thought to be Maggie and Ella's last moments on Earth.
Aw, that's really sad.
I know.
That's so sad.
Also, there's a song about the death of Maggie Vale.
Really?
Yeah, it's on my computer.
What?
Do you want to see it?
Yeah, I do. Okay.
So the song, titled The Death of Maggie Vale, it's collected from a woman named Mrs. Emma McCready of St. John, who learned it from her mother.
Mm-hmm.
And the story is also told in a different song titled Monroe's Confession, which is printed in Helen Creighton's Folk Songs of Southern New Brunswick.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm excited. Are you going to sing it?
No, because I forget how to read music notes.
Oh, okay.
"Come all young friends and lend an ear, a dreadful story you shall hear. This murderous deed was done of late in 1868. There was a man named John Monroe who did Miss Vale according go. This girl was handsome, young and fair, there few that could with her compare. Monroe was married, it is true, he had a wife and children too. But still Miss Vale he went to see, not caring what the talk might be. In course of time, an offspring came, which brought to light their hidden shame. But still together they did go, till he did prove her overthrow." Quick trigger warning for racism in this next part. "'Twas out on the Black River Plains, some quote, colored folk, unquote, found the remains. Clothing and skull, and likewise hair, which showed someone had been murdered there. The bones and clothing that were found were gathered up and brought to town. An inquest held on the remains of those who were found on the Black River Plains. The jury found it very plain, Miss Vale and baby had been slain. The cruel wretch, he did the deed, and left them there for the wild beast to feed. He killed the baby with a rush, and covered them with moss and brush, and hurried off with rapid flight, not thinking they would come to light. The jury found it plain also that they were killed by John Monroe. By his own hand the deed was done, and he was sentenced to be hung. And now, young girls, a warning take. Be sure that you make no mistake. If you ever do catch a beau, beware of one like John Monroe." That's the song.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That is crazy. Wait, who wrote the song?
Emma McCreary?
Okay. Oh, yes, you did say that at the beginning.
McCready. But she learned it from her mom.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. But she, like, wrote out the lyric.
I wonder if it's, like, is there a YouTube on it?
Oh, probably.
Yeah, because I wonder if it's kind of, like, old the Fisher
sheet work.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So that's the song, The Death of Maggie Vale.
Wow. Thank you.
Well, I'm not done yet.
No, I'm excited for the ghost part.
Ooh. We should do that every time.
Okay.
Okay. Remember at the start of the episode when I mentioned my boss, Colin?
Yes.
When he told me the story, it gave me chills. I already have chills.
Me too.
I can feel them.
I had chills from the song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when writing it out for the podcast, I got really spooked and I had to stop.
Oh,
it was
no.
Dark out and I was in the living room. I was really scared. So the year is around 2002 to 2003, and Colin is in grade 11 or 12, so he's a teenager. It was just after Halloween, the first or second week of November.
When the veil is the thinnest between worlds.
When him and his two friends, Fred and Scott, their names have been changed to protect their privacy.
Okay.
Thought they would check out Black River Road, because this case is also called
Black River Road?
Black River Road death, whatever. Right.
Okay.
To try to see Maggie Vale's ghost. And she is said to haunt the area where she spent her last moments on Black River Road.
Right.
Now, you're probably wondering what made them want to go check it out themselves, other than wanting to do some tomfoolery.
Mm-hmm.
Wink, wink. Callback. Well, earlier, Colin had actually found a booklet in the trunk of his car about Maggie Vale.
What?
And he said to me he wasn't quite sure where it came from, but it assumes it got there when someone had borrowed his car. I think his dad borrowed his car and then...
Sorry, I heard something really weird.
Like a dog whimpering.
Yeah, it might be. There is a dog upstairs sometimes.
Oh,
okay. Okay. It's really spooky. Okay.
Being curious, he read the booklet and told his friends, and they decided to check out Black River Road themselves.
Okay.
It was also like just a thing for teenagers in St. John to check out Black River Road to try to see Maggie's ghost.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Like, it was like a dare. Like, have you been to Black River Road?
Yes.
It was a dark and foggy night, but unseasonably warm for the first couple weeks of November. The three of them drove out to Black River Road and pulled over at an old or abandoned construction site. After a few moments of not seeing or hearing anything, they started taunting Maggie.
No, bruh, she's been through too much.
Trying to get her to show herself.
Maggie!
I mean, yeah. Still not seeing anything, they decided to drive further down the road. During this second drive, Colin saw an opaque figure on the side of the road out of the corner of his eye. And he's the one driving the car.
Oh, no.
Not knowing if he actually saw anything, he didn't mention it until Fred asked, "Did you guys see that?"
Oh, creepy.
Only Colin and Fred saw it. Creepy. So Colin was driving and Fred was in the passenger seat. And then their other friend was in the back seat.
Okay.
Scott said he didn't see anything. Scott was in the back seat.
Yeah.
Again, they decided to pull over.
What? Okay.
They pulled over to a second location. This time into a field where they saw an excavator. And being teenagers, they were just like, let's go hang out in this field with this machinery.
I love farm kids.
Yeah. They got out of the car, and Colin instinctually locked the doors. Keep that in mind.
They hung around the excavator.
Just talking when they saw a strange light coming from behind the machine.
Oh my god, okay.
Spooked, they ran back to the car, got inside, and started driving back to where they originally stopped.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't until they were back on the road that Colin realized the windows were rolled down.
What?
And the doors were unlocked when they left the field.
Wait, okay.
Even though when they got to the field, he locked the car.
Oh, creepy.
And
that's
they just see
so
a strange
creepy.
Light. He said that it was probably just a farmer with a flashlight being like, who the hell's in my field?
Yeah, honestly, yeah.
But they were really scared. So they just like bolted to the car and the windows were rolled down and the doors were unlocked.
That's good. I thought that one of them was going to leave their keys in their car by accident.
Oh, no. So they drive back to the old construction site and hang out inside the car. After a few minutes, Colin's phone starts to ring, so he grabs it, thinking his parents are calling to ask where he is or when he'll be home.
Classic.
But his phone is turned off.
Oh, also it's like a brick flip phone, I imagine.
Flip phone, yeah.
Yeah.
They kind of just played this off as an anomaly. But then the inside of the car began to fog up, almost instantly, like condensation in the windows.
What the fuck? Okay.
Fred, who was in the passenger seat, grabbed a flashlight and opened his door to see if anything was going on outside. But he didn't see anything, so he closed the door. With the flashlight still on, three dots appeared on the side of the window, which turned into five dots.
No.
And then turned into streaks like someone's dragging
their
fingers across a condensation in the car.
Inside. Oh my god. Oh my god. What? This is real?
Yes.
Okay. That's so scary.
I know.
Okay.
Scott, who was in the back seat, then said that the rear window was frosting. And remember, it's unseasonably warm.
Right.
It's not frosty outside.
Oh my god. Okay.
The side windows were already full of condensation, but only the back rear window was frosting. And when he touched it, there was frost on his fingertips. He, like, showed Colin and Fred.
What?
Mm-hmm.
That's so crazy.
At this point, they were getting really spooked.
Yeah, I'm surprised they haven't driven away yet.
I know. Like, remember what? That Fred still has the flashlight on, so he's, like, moving it to look at the windows inside the car, obviously. When they started to see scratches on their rear window in the frost.
Oh, no.
Obviously, after seeing this, Colin's freaking out. So he rolls down all the windows and says, "Whatever you are, get out of this car. Like, whoa. Get out." He said he instantly felt better.
Whoa.
Instantly.
Whoa.
And at this point, they decided to head back home.
That's so crazy.
Yeah. But on their way, they stopped again, kind of to calm themselves down and have another look at the windows.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were like, what the fuck just happened?
Yeah.
With the flashlight in hand, Fred pointed around the car where various handprints were on the windows.
Oh.
He even pointed it up to the sunroof where they saw Maggie die.
What?
Written in the condensation like you would on a mirror in the bathroom when it's steamy.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Wait.
Yeah. I'm not kidding. This is real.
Wait, so it's John's ghost. It's not Maggie's ghost.
Well, hold on.
Okay.
They decided to get out of the car and have a look.
Wait, so they're still at the construction site?
No, they drove away. They drove, like, a bit back home.
Okay, okay.
Once outside the car, they saw noticeable handprints all over the car. And they were, like, not, like, in frost or condensation. They were, like, kind of white.
Like, weird.
Ectoplasm-y.
Ooh.
Like, ooh, noticeable. Gooey. Yeah.
Like this?
Like a stress ball. Yeah. Like, kind of, but, like, not goopy like you'd see in, like, Ghostbusters, but, like, noticeable, not in frost or condensation, like, kind of whitish, I think.
That's so spooky.
Mm-hmm. So, there's noticeable handprints all over the car, on the windows, and the trunk. Like, someone crawled onto the trunk because there were scratches on the rear window.
Oh, yeah. Wait. Okay, wait. It's not the kid, is it? Okay.
Oh, actually, I don't know.
Oh.
Taking another look at the sunroof, they realized that the writing actually said Maggie died. Not Maggie die.
Oh.
Maggie died.
Oh.
Yeah, isn't that sad?
That's really sad, yeah.
There was also a hand streak on the passenger side that ended on the door. Remember when Fred opened the door earlier to peek outside?
Yeah.
What if the spirit climbed in?
Yeah.
The car.
That's what it seems like.
Dragged its hand.
Yeah.
And got in the car when he opened the door.
Ugh, so creepy. So creepy.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have full body chills.
Me too.
So they went home. And never really spoke of it again. Colin Classic. And Fred had a few conversations about it, but it really upset Scott. He has never, ever talked about it.
Wow.
Never. He's never mentioned it. It really freaked him out.
Oh, I mean, yeah, fair.
Yeah.
That would be so scary.
Yeah.
Like, terrifying.
So Colin and Fred stopped talking about it, too, because Scott was really upset about it.
Right.
2 weeks after this experience, Colin was on a rowing trip. Like, you know, growing. Yeah. He was telling his teammates about the things he experienced on Black River Road, but one of them, we'll call him Rob, didn't believe him.
Okay.
Classic.
Classic Rob.
A short time later, on another trip, Rob apologized to Colin for not believing him. Because he, too, went to Black River Road, but he went alone.
Oh, my God.
To see if anything would happen.
I'm chilling out so hard. Okay.
He had a different experience. He was driving down the road when he saw a woman in a white dress on the side of the road.
Oh, God.
And watched as she floated across the road and disappeared into the woods on the other side.
Oh, God. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then he was like,
He was like, Colin, I'm actually really sorry. I do believe you. Because that's fucked up.
Yeah.
Another one of Colin's friends told him once that he was driving down Black River Road one night in his truck, and there was a car behind him. He was just driving. So I assume he was periodically checking his rearview mirror, as one does.
Mm-hmm.
At one of these glances, he saw a woman crawl onto onto his truck bed cover.
He
had a cover on his truck bed, so it's flat. He saw a woman crawl onto it and started to see handprints on his rearview window.
Oh, God. That's my nightmare.
Yeah.
I don't like rearview mirror stuff.
I know, me either.
It's really scary.
Obviously freaked out, he immediately he swerves over to the side of the road to see who was in his truck. He's like, what the hell? How does that even happen? When he got out, he didn't see anyone.
He
got out of his car because he was like, gutsy. What the hell? Someone's crawling into my truck?
Right.
Like, that's weird.
It's so funny how everyone automatically assumes it's just a real person.
I know.
And I automatically assume it's a ghost.
Yeah, I know. The car that was driving behind him also pulled over to see if he was okay, because they were like, why is this guy just like randomly pulling over?
Oh, that's kind of nice.
Yeah, they were like, do you need help? And he mentioned to the driver what he saw, but they didn't see anyone in his truck.
Yeah.
But they both saw handprints on the rearview window.
Oh, creepy, 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 creepy.
So, is it Maggie that continues to haunt Black River Road? Maybe her spirit's lost. Or maybe she's just searching for Ella in the afterlife.
That's so sad. And that
is the story of Maggie Vale and Black River Road.
Wow.
Thank you again, Colin, for sharing this with me.
Yeah, thank you, Colin. That's amazing.
It was so fun to research. Yeah. And to hear Colin's story, I was like crying.
Yeah.
Listening to it.
It's so scary.
Yeah.
Yeah. We just wanted to add at the end of this, if you are experiencing any kind of sexualized violence, domestic violence, you can call Victim Link BC. It's toll-free, confidential, and multilingual. It can be accessed by calling or texting 1-800-563-0808. That's 1-800-563-0808. Or you can send an email to 211-victimlinkbc@uwbc.ca. Also, if you are experiencing any kind of crisis, you can call the National Suicide Crisis Helpline at 988. You can call that number or text them. Or you can also call the BC Mental Health and Crisis Response at 310-6789 with no area code needed. Thank you for listening
to my story. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling spookied.
Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah, isn't that great?
Yeah, because it is getting deeper into October. Ooh. It is getting closer to Samhain.
Yes.
The veil is thinning so much. The ghost tour guide mentioned that yesterday too.
Yes.
And I was like, yes, so real. I feel it so much. And he also mentioned that Victoria is the most haunted city in all of Canada. Did you know that?
All of Canada?
Yeah. And some say that in Victoria, the veil is always thin, actually.
Actually, I believe that.
Me too. I feel it.
I think I feel that.
It's interesting because I think about Salt Spring Island.
Mm-hmm.
It's apparently on this huge bed of quartz.
Oh,
quartz crystal.
Wow.
And so there's a lot of electromagnetic, yeah, spiritually rock things happening.
Whoa.
I don't know. Listen, I'm not a scientist. I'm not a rockologist.
A geologist?
Yeah. But I do know that.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is going to be such a... I can feel it. I love Halloween.
Me too. I can feel it too. It's great.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It just feels like home.
Yeah. Yeah. So true. Mm-hmm. We should move to Halloween Town.
Yes.
Yes. Well, thank you.
Thank you for listening, everybody.
And we'll see you soon.
And we'll talk to you next time.
Bye. Bye. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, or you have your own ghost story, you can email us at ghoulsocietypod@gmail.com. If you would like to follow us on Instagram, you can find us at ghoulsocietypod.
And make sure to check out Halloween Market YYJ.
Yes.
For October 26th and 27th. It'll be at the Da Vinci Center in Vic West.
Yeah. And we will see you there. One and two and three and four and one. me. You. Are you ready? You've
been inducted into the Underground Ghouls Society.
Bye, Liz. I'm gonna do it again.
Okay.
You've officially, right? Yeah.